You know, the other day in Miami, my car rolled past American Airlines Arena, and the local man driving pointed out that the place is quieter than usual. There's still no pro basketball season. The lockout means an economic loss for Miami. Cities across the country are figuring out what else to do with their arenas, and some might look for inspiration to Kansas City. In that city, there is no major sports tenant at all for the Sprint Center built in 2007, but it is still one of the nation's busiest arenas. Laura Spencer reports from member station KCUR.
It's a Saturday night outside the Sprint Center, a 19,000-seat arena shaped like a glittering glass bowl in the middle of downtown Kansas City. When it opened 4 years ago, it was a gamble to spend nearly $300 million for an arena without a sports tenant. But voters passed a hotel and car rental tax. Sprint paid for the naming rights and AEG management rights, and the game was on. Promoters were sure it would soon have a basketball or at least a hockey team.
Anyone need tickets tonight, guys? Tickets?
But no team calls this arena home yet. Sprint Center now hosts Rappers and the Rodeo, Elmo and Cirque du Soleil, and on this night, Guns N' Roses. About 400 events so far, drawing an estimated 4 million people. It turns a profit for its operators and the city.
Unlimited is good. And thanks to Sprint, you can talk.
It's a quieter scene inside the Sprint Center on a recent weekday. General Manager Brenda Tinnen says sports and ticket sales are in her blood. Tinnen's held management positions around the country, including at the very different Staples Center in L.A., which is home to the Grammys, two NBA teams, an NHL team, and an AFL team.
So when you just take, you know, the sheer numbers of what all of those events represent in terms of dates you have to hold on the calendar, there are very few windows of opportunity to book other events.
Tinnen says at the Sprint Center there are some dates booked for college basketball, but there's a lot more flexibility in the schedule. Lady Gaga, Paul McCartney, and George Strait have all played here. And as artists spend more time on tour these days, relying on ticket sales, she tries to encourage tour buses to make an extra stop.
There was a show a couple months ago that I had been trying to get to play here, and I heard they were playing in Chicago, and I heard they were playing in San Antonio. I just picked up the phone. I said, "Hey, Tony, you have to drive right past Kansas City. You know, let's see if we can't get you to stop in and work this out."
Tinnen says location is important. According to Pollstar Magazine's year-end report, Sprint Center ranked as America's fifth busiest arena and number 13 among worldwide venues. Sports economist Patrick Risch teaches at Webster University in St. Louis.
It really is a little bit surprising given that they don't have a full-time professional sports tenant.
And it's unlikely that the Sprint Center will land a major sports tenant anytime soon, although city officials say they're always looking.
There was always a goal to have the ability to attract an NBA or NHL facility, and so it was designed to those standards.
Architect Brad Clark was part of the team that designed the Sprint Center. His firm, Populous, also designed the new Yankee Stadium and Target Field in Minneapolis. Clark says it's unusual to design an arena with no particular tenant in mind. But in Kansas City, so far, it seems to be working.
I think we were able to walk that line between professional sports building and major entertainment venue so that it can do both.
A few blocks away, the new $326 million Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts was funded with private donations. It has three major league arts tenants, the ballet, the symphony, and the opera. Officials say ticket sales have been strong since the opening in mid-September. For now, it appears the "build it and they will come" mantra seems to be holding true. For NPR News, I'm Laura Spencer in Kansas City.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Linda Wertheimer.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Good morning. While Republicans prepared to debate yesterday, a debate we've heard elsewhere in this program, President Obama was visiting New Hampshire. He appeared in that state, which holds the nation's first primary. New Hampshire is also an important general election state, and the president's appearance offered a counterweight to all the Republicans who've been busy there. NPR's Scott Horsley reports.
Supporters of President Obama who crowded into the gym at Manchester Central High School had plenty of time to enjoy the marching band as they waited for the president. He stopped off along the way for a cup of coffee with a high school trigonometry teacher who's also a retired Army colonel.
Before I came to school today, I had coffee.
The president was briefly interrupted, Occupy Wall Street style, but the demonstrators were quickly drowned out. Mr. Obama said he understood the demonstrators' frustration and the fear that the American dream seems to be slipping away.
It's supposed to be a big, compassionate country where everybody who works hard should have a chance to get ahead. Not just the person who owns the factory, but the men and women who work on the factory floor.
Mr. Obama says those are the ideals that got him into politics. The payroll tax cut he signed last year saved the average working family about $1,000 this year, but is due to expire at the end of December. Mr. Obama says Congress should not only extend the tax cut, but enlarge it, so working families would save an average of $1,500 next year.
And that's $1,500 that would have been taken out of your paycheck would instead be going into your pocket. And that means you'd be spending in small businesses.
The president wants to offset the cost of that payroll tax cut with higher taxes on the wealthiest Americans. That's been the sticking point with Republicans in Congress.
Now, the American people are with us on this. And it's time for the folks who are running around spending all their time talking about what's wrong with America to spend some time rolling up their sleeves to help us rebuild America.
Republican Mitt Romney attempted a political time warp, leapfrogging his primary competitors and taking direct aim at Mr. Obama. In full-page newspaper ads, Romney declared the president's economic policies had failed, and he debuted a new TV ad that warps both time and the truth in trying to use Mr. Obama's own words against him.
If we keep talking about the economy, we're going to lose.
Mr. Obama did say that in 2008, but Romney's ad omits the fact that Mr. Obama was quoting someone from John McCain's campaign at the time. In 2011, the president has not shied away from talking about the economy, insisting it's on the mend, if all too slowly. Some of that improvement is visible here in New Hampshire. At Rico's Barbershop, not far from Central High, Jonathan DeJesus says business is picking up. Holidays are always a good time for a haircut.
I used to live in Florida. It's a lot better over here than it is in Florida. Like, I cut hair, so no matter what, at the end of the day, everyone always needs a haircut, so.
New Hampshire's unemployment rate is under 5.5%, well below the national average.
We actually have steady customers that come once a week. Some of them come twice a week. It depends on exactly how much money they make during the week.
Outside, Steve Claremont is smoking a cigarette, having just knocked off from his roofing job. With winter coming on, he says, lots of people need new roofs. He was excited by Mr. Obama's visit.
I think he's doing the best he can, but it's not a one-man job. You know, it's a House of Representatives and stuff like that.
So far, Republicans in the House and the Senate have been cool to most of Mr. Obama's jobs proposals. But the president told supporters at Central High that in the spirit of Thanksgiving, he's planning to give lawmakers another chance. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Manchester, New Hampshire.
This is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Tony Cox, sitting in for Michelle Martin. Today we are pausing to give thanks, and of course we're also taking time to enjoy turkey and all of the trimmings and watch some football as well. But it's also time again for Black Friday, when millions of Americans trade cranberry sauce and stuffing for credit cards and shopping bags. Black Friday is the traditional start of the holiday shopping season. Many of us will get caught up in the frenzy and spend more than planned, maybe even more than we can afford. To get some friendly advice, though, on how to avoid all of that, we are joined now by consumer credit expert John Olsheimer. He is also the author of You're Nothing But a Number. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So as soon as the store doors open, John, Americans enticed by deep discounts will begin giving their wallets a real workout. Some will pay with cash, others will swipe credit cards. What should people keep in mind as they make their way to the register?
Well, they should be very careful. And most people seem to enter a form of temporary financial insanity beginning on Black Friday and will spend an enormous amount of money. And this makes them susceptible to the retail credit card offers that you almost always get at the register when you're trying to check out. However, this year, they're going to be especially aggressive. Generally, 10% is the discount they're offering if you'll open a new card. This year, we're already seeing discounts in the 15 to 20% range, which sounds very compelling to the consumer because you're going to save 20% off of whatever you purchase that day, which is very nice, of course. However, if you peel back the onion and look at the terms of those cards, they're absolutely not terribly advantageous to consumers because the interest rates are almost always well into the 20% range, and the credit limits on those cards are almost always below $1,000. They seem to have become a one-size-fits-all type of credit card product where normally, to get interest rates well into the 20s and very low credit limits, you've got to have bad credit. That's a subprime type of credit card. However, they've become almost accepted in the retail card environment that people even with fantastic credit are willing to accept credit cards that have these very subprime types of terms, which makes it very expensive if you do choose to carry the debt from one month to the next.
Is there a situation where signing up for one of these cards could actually work to someone's benefit, and what would that be?
Well, look, the only real benefit to the consumer for signing up for one of these cards is the same-day discount. And if they're buying something very expensive, a flat-panel television or a couch, something that's, you know, 20% off is going to save them hundreds of dollars, then that's really where the benefit ends. The minute you start rolling that balance from one month to the next with such a high interest rate, you really chew up that discount, and eventually the cards are going to flip into the favor of the issuer, and you're going to find yourself actually spending more for the item than what you thought you were going to get, even with the discount.
There's so many areas, John, I want to hit with you. Let's talk about this one for a moment, the one that I always see at this time of the year. No payment, no interest for a year. What about those?
Oh, those are very, very compelling, aren't they? Free money, no payment for a year. I'm not sure why that entices people so much. I mean, you're eventually going to have to pay it. It's just delaying the inevitable. The problem with those type of accounts is that you end up opening essentially a store credit card. They will max out the card and put whatever the purchase is on the card. And then you end up with that debt on your credit report for the entire year with no balance being paid, meaning that the balance does not come down at all. And it normally does in a normal credit card environment. It's what we call stagnant debt. And stagnant debt is not good for your credit scores. And if it's going to damage your credit scores, it's going to do so the entire year until we have this conversation next Black Friday. So I would suggest that you thank the clerk for the offer, but avoid those types of in-store offers when possible.
Well, let's talk about this scenario, John, for a moment. Suppose I don't have any choice. I have to use a credit card because I don't have any cash to pay for things for Christmas that I want to buy, and I am going to buy things for Christmas for my family and kids, et cetera, et cetera. Now, what kind of credit card should I use? If I'm at, let's say, Macy's, should I use a Macy's card, or if I have one of the other cards, Visa, MasterCard, American Express, should I use one of those instead?
I would absolutely, every day of the week, suggest that you use a general use credit card like a Visa, MasterCard, Discover, or Amex over the retail store card for two primary reasons. First off, the interest rates on those cards are almost always going to be better than the interest rate on a retail store card. You can have a Visa with an interest rate as low as 7.9% if you have good credit. Even the average interest rate, according to the Federal Reserve, is somewhere between 12 and 13%, which is half of what it's going to be on a retail store credit card. So it's cheaper to carry the debt if you choose to do so. Second, the credit limit on those types of general use cards are going to be much higher than what you're going to get on a retail store card. So from a credit scoring perspective, you're leveraging less of the available credit of the card, which is better for your credit score. So it's really a win for the consumer to just simply use one of the general use credit cards that are already in their wallet.
This is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Tony Cox sitting in for Michelle Martin, and we are talking with John Alzheimer. He is a financial expert who specializes in consumer credit. We are talking about Black Friday and how to keep yourself out of the poorhouse by misusing those credit cards in your purse and in your wallet. What about, John, those ubiquitous gift cards? The grocery stores these days are full of every kind of gift card that you can imagine. Are these a good deal, or should we avoid them?
I love gift cards, and I realize that they're not terribly personal when you're giving them to someone, but it is truly, in my mind anyways, the bulletproof gift. Because you don't have to worry about sizes, you don't have to worry about styles, you don't have to worry about colors, and you don't have to worry about somebody returning it if they don't want it. The fee that you pay for buying one of those gift cards is generally very, very modest, a couple of dollars at most. And to use the gift card, the recipient, you've got some pretty aggressive protections under the Credit Card Act that was passed just last year. And even if you, for example, lose the card for a few years or just simply choose not to use it, when you choose to get around to using it, it's going to have almost the entire value that was put on it when it was given to you in the first place. And we couldn't have said this last year at this time because the value could go away. Now the Card Act protects the recipient. So I really love gift cards because of those reasons.
Does it make a difference where you buy the gift card? Because since you can buy so many different types at the grocery store, as we said, do you have the same protection buying it there as if you would if you bought it at the retailer that it's for?
You certainly do. And I'll put it as simple as I possibly can. A gift card is a gift card is a gift card wherever you buy it from. The protections are equally aggressive and equally consumer friendly regardless of where that gift card comes from.
One of the other things we are seeing coming back into the marketplace this year, this season, during these tough economic times, John, is the layaway. Is that a good thing? No.
Isn't that great? The layaway, the blast from the past, credit before credit became credit. layaway is actually not a bad deal for a couple of reasons. It completely takes the credit application and credit report out of the equation. It is not a true credit vehicle in the traditional sense of the word. The only downside that some people have with respect to layaway is that you are charged a small fee to set up the layaway plan with the merchant. But if you compared that to the amount of interest that you'd pay if you were to buy the item on a true credit card and then revolve the balance for a few months, it's actually cheaper in many cases to do it on layaway. Some retailers are charging you $5 to set up the layaway plan. Here's the downside with layaway. In the olden days, when layaway was popular a couple of decades ago, you could actually take months to pay off the item and then actually take it home. They're not giving you that type of leeway any longer. If you sign up for a layaway plan, you better have it in your budget so that you're going to be able to make payments, maybe four or five of them over a small month or 2 month period, because that's really all they're going to give you in order to pay off the item and come pick it up.
Let's talk about buying online. Is that the way to go now, or is it too close to Christmas in order to buy something and have it in your hand in time for Christmas morning?
We are still absolutely safe enough to buy items online and get them well in advance of Christmas. You'll even see some stores advertising that if you buy the item 3 or 4 days before Christmas, they'll have it there in time to stick it under the tree. Also, free shipping. So think of the $3.50 per gallon that you're not spending to drive to the mall for half an hour, find a parking spot, buy the item, and come home. Let someone else do that for you. Free shipping is fantastic, and that's generally something that retailers use kind of as an added benefit for going online and buying and purchasing goods versus having to go to the mall and actually buy them there.
John Elsheimer is a consumer credit expert. He joined us from the studios of Georgia Public Radio in Atlanta. John, thank you very much, and happy Thanksgiving to you.
Thank you for having me, and happy Thanksgiving to you, too.
NPR's business news starts with new life for an old car factory. An abandoned General Motors plant has a new lease on life. GM walked away from the former Fisher Body One plant in Flint, Michigan, after it filed for bankruptcy. The factory has a rich history. It was one of the places where sit-down strikes in the 1930s led to recognition of the United Auto Workers Union. Now, a part of the factory is occupied again, but workers there are not making cars. They're distributing high-priced prescription drugs. From the Midwest Reporting Project, Changing Gears, Kate Davidson reports.
There's one group of experts who can always tell you the history and significance of an old factory. They're the guys at the bar across the street.
I was a line spot welder, Fisher Body 1, South Unit, Department 42.
Dan Wright is still a regular at the Caboose Lounge. He worked at Fisher Body briefly in the 70s. Back then,
the bars were always full, and restaurants were always full, and stores were always full. And all these stores, bars, and restaurants you go to now, there's nobody there. And it's sad that Flint died the way it did.
Now Michigan's governor has declared a financial emergency in Flint, the once prosperous birthplace of GM. And it was at Fisher Body in late 1936 that something unusual happened.
Or rather, nothing happened. Nothing moved. The workers had sat down. They would not work.
We're actually standing in the area very close right now where the 1937 sit-down strike was. It formed the UAW. It was in this building.
Phil Hagerman is president and CEO of Diplomat Specialty Pharmacy, which moved in this year. Diplomat specializes in drugs that target serious illnesses like cancer, MS, and HIV/AIDS. Many produce side effects, so nurses here call patients to make sure they stick to their treatment plans. In the distribution center, bins of medication are winding along a conveyor belt, ready to be shipped.
Specialty pharmacy is the fastest growing component in the pharmacy industry. Traditional pharmacy is growing at 2 to 5% a year. Specialty pharmacy is growing at 15 to 25% a year.
Diplomat hired more than 200 people this year. Phil Hagerman says the company is on track to top $1 billion in sales next year.
We're distributing as many as 2,000 or more prescriptions a day around the country, shipping to every state every day from this building.
This building really highlights the transformation of the industrial Midwest. GM shuttered its sprawling plant in the 80s, and most of it was demolished. But the steel and concrete, the main structure of this building, were retrofitted into an engineering and design center for GM. Diplomat later bought half the space, and it's still enormous, 550,000 square feet. That's more than 1,000 square feet per employee.
How often do normal business rules allow a company to have a 10-year growth footprint? It just doesn't happen because the cost of the building is so great. But because we acquired this through an auction process at a very, very low cost, we have a building that we know we can grow into for about 10 years.
So that's one advantage of acquiring property discarded by industrial giants. Advantage number two, 1,700 cubicles left behind. Advantage number three, random industrial signs that read caution, pedestrian traffic, sound horn. And advantage four, the government loves you, especially if you're a high-tech or medical company. In fact, Diplomat won't pay property taxes here for almost 15 years, and it got a $62 million tax break from the state. In return, CEO Phil Hagerman says he'll hire 4,000 people in the next two decades. Still, thousands of people used to stream through the Caboose Lounge every week. Waitress Janet Anderson says the new workers at Diplomat don't come in yet, but she's hopeful.
I do good breakfasts, real good breakfasts. You can ask anybody here.
And the reality is hope itself is a welcome sign of change in Flint. For NPR News, I'm Kate Davidson.